Hi everyone, my name's Chris, I'm an Alex. 40 minutes, wow, that's a luxury, isn't it? Don't know what to say now. Sit here for 40 minutes and meditate. I'm kidding. It's really nice to be asked to do a chair as always. Feel a little bit on offer, more than normal. Seems a bit like, I suppose it's this microphone in front of me. Fuck, I'm really going to one now, can't I? Start talking about when I was three and like my first chair, I was listening to Caroline. Thanks for your chair, it was, you know, it was great. And Caroline. And I remember doing my first chair, I was sort of like, I don't think when I first came around, I really wanted to do a chair, but I'd done my first chair, I was 6 months clean, it was an hour meeting, I went on for 50 minutes and I'd only got to about the age of 15. It's incredible, but you know, that was just where I was at, and bless them, none of them said anything, and they just like was, I think, happy they only had 10 minutes to share in, because most of them didn't want to be in the meeting anyway. But so anyway, I'll talk a little bit about me using, as I normally do, a little bit about, you know, my recovery, and a little bit about the future, my hopes for the future. So, the fog's cleared a bit, because I've been around a few years now, and the fog's cleared a little bit, because when I first come into meetings, and I had such a low opinion of myself, and such little self-worth, it was on the deck, it really was on the deck. And so I really desperately wanted to fit in here, and I really wanted you guys to like me and accept me, and I wanted to be a part of what was going on here. So bless me at that time, but I sort of made my using a bit worse than it was. And my story was something along the lines of, I started using when I was 11, and you know, I was robbing banks by the time I was 14 or something like that. You know, it was really like, and the fog's cleared, like I said. So over the years I've been around, I've stayed around, and I realised, you know, no, I wasn't using at 11 years old. I was playing run-outs at 11 years old, round the flats, Tin Tan Tommy or something. You know, I was not using drugs at 11. And my story is my story. You know, I don't, you know, it was bad enough, you know. It was what it was, you know, and I've got a little bit of self-esteem today, a little bit of worth, and I still sort of like to be liked, of course, but my life don't depend on it, you know. You know, if I leave here and, you know, a few people, you know, or, you know, if people don't get on with me, that's the way it is. I'm not, you know, so caught up in that, because I'm quite comfortable with who I am today. Well, as comfortable as I've ever been with who I am today. So my using started a little bit later than 11. It was 12 and a half. No, it wasn't. It was about 14, 15, I think. You know, I think on my 14th birthday, I remember buying an eighth of Leb. And that was a big deal, you know, an eighth of this puff. And skinning up joints around the flats with my mates. And God, it was like one puff and the thing went, choo. You know, that was what it was like then, you know, and just hanging about around the flats and just wanting to be a part of that, sort of like when I come in here, you know, wanting to fit in there, wanting to fit in with these mates, and what, you know, they all seemed a lot colder than I was, and they all seemed like able to do stuff I couldn't do, and, you know, and just sort of like having that, I don't know, just feeling really conscious of myself, even at that young age, and I suppose pretty normal, that awkward teenage, you know, painful teenage years, you know, like early recovery, really, you know, like just so like awkward. And I was tall, I've always been tall, it seems like, you know, I had size 8 feet when I was in primary school, and I was really aware of that and conscious of that, you know, so I used to stoop over and try and make me, it's really weird, isn't it, tall people try and make themselves smaller, little people try and make themselves bigger, don't they, like, you know, it's just, I suppose that's just the way it is. But so I was sort of conscious of that, and it's quite painful times, really. But my using did progress pretty quickly, perhaps because of where I was living and just how it was around the flats, sort of thing, as I refer to it, around the flats, you know, the area I was brought up in. And we started getting into other drugs pretty quickly, you know, and by the time I was somewhere in the region of 16, 17 A-class drugs had come on the scene. And the part of London I grew up in, Islington, it was frowned upon to touch a particular drug, heroin. It was frowned upon. You was a lowlife, you was a junkie, you was a scumbag, but you can sit up the pub slinging Charlie up you because you're Charlie Big Spuds then. You know, with your Pringle jumper on and your Farrah's and thinking, like, you know, so I went through that sort of period, but I felt so uncomfortable around that environment. I just really felt uncomfortable. You know, I'd have mates that talk to girls and I just think, how do you do that? I wish I could do that. I just didn't, you know, I was just not in a very good shape, and I don't know why, it was just how it was for me. So when heroin come along, that was my out. That was my, you know, because it was quite antisocial. You know, you wasn't standing in pubs doing heroin. You were sitting around someone's ass, and there was only a couple of you. And, you know, and I think I got off on that, and it was like a saviour, to be honest. It was like, oh, what a result. You know, I used to refer to it as my brown overcoat. Once I put that on, no one could get near me, you know. And then that just progressed. You know, it started off, I didn't even know about fixing, I didn't even know about chasing, I didn't even know none of that stuff. We used to buy a £10 bag between about three of us and snort a line. And then just be out of our nut and hide from the rest of them, because if they see us out of our nut on gear, it'd be on top. And then that just progressed in time. And I just found my way, hanging about with people that used that particular drug, and it just got, you know. But my experience was that a lot of mates of mine had sort of gone through the prison systems or ball stalls and all that stuff. That wasn't my experience. When I left school, I started to work, worked in a post office, and then I had other jobs and stuff like that. So it came a bit late. I was a later developer in that world, you know. And I don't know how I managed really to keep it together. You know, it's amazing how you can do it at times, you know, or how I could do it then. You know, I managed to get up 5:30 in the morning and go to work. You know, though I didn't last long there, to be honest. I'd stay there for a couple of hours and then I'd shoot off and go and score. You know, they'd send me out with sacks of mail to go and deliver. And I'd just go and sit around with dealers and open everyone's letters, hoping there was some money in there. So, you know, that's why I never ever trust anything in the post. Because that's what I used to do. I used to just sit there opening letters. It's terrible, really. It's not funny, really, because you'd have some, I don't know, two little Johnny, you know, £10 for his birthday. That'd be like, oh, nice one, Johnny. You know, bang, in the sky. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't very nice, really, when I think back on it. It wasn't, you know. But anyway, that's what I'd done when I was using drugs. I wasn't a very nice person. Didn't really care much about other people that much, really. Although I did. You know, I didn't. In them examples, like, you know, doing stuff like that, I didn't. But in other ways, I did care about people, you know, and I did have, you know, I wasn't all such a bad bastard, you know, as like I thought when I come in here. It wasn't as, you know, I wasn't that bad, you know, I was just, I had this illness, you know, I had addiction going on. What to say now, where to go, but anyway, like I said, so it progressed pretty quickly, and my using took me to places pretty quickly that I didn't really want to be, and then I'm going to zoom right forward now, I'm going to fast forward, and eventually it got to a place where it was just really quite degrading, it was really quite sore every day, there wasn't much money about. You know, I can sit here and fanny and say that I was this, you know, I could always get a pound note and that. No, it wasn't really like that for me. I couldn't always get a pound note. Getting a pound note was fucking hard work at the best of times, you know. And then I fell into crime and I started committing crime. You know, managing to keep it together to work fell out the window. And then so I just fell into crime to support my habit. And that's literally what happened. I fell into crime. And no way am I a fucking professional criminal or whatever. You know, I was just a desperate junkie trying to get money to get drugs. And my crime showed that, really, because I'd find myself running in and out of banks and building societies, giving cashiers notes and putting my hand in my pocket. So when she looked up, she see me with what she might have thought was a fucking gun or something, and then she'd give me a couple of quid. That was what I got my sentences for, you know. It was not, no, like, when I got my first sentence, though, because I was nicked for robbery, you know, and there's like an hierarchy in prison. So if you're nicked for something like robbery or drug dealing, you're sort of up on the higher echelons of the prison fucking bollocks, you know. And you know, so I let people believe that, you know, I let people believe that. Because there again, I wanted to fit in now. I wanted to, you know, the less grief I had wherever I went, and I always wanted to sort of fit in. So I let people believe that, let them believe that I was a fucking armed robber or whatever, you know, and I didn't tell anyone that that was the reality. It's only when I got into recovery that I was able to start to look at things honestly, you know, start to look at my life honestly, and start to look at how I am honestly. It's only recovery that's given me this, because there's, you know, but anyway, so I fought recovery in prison on one of my sentences. The first sentence I got was quite a long sentence, and I didn't learn anything really on that sentence. I learned how to survive in the institutions. I learned who to talk to, who not to talk to. You know, we're very good at that, in my judgment, addicts, at fitting into places and being sort of like, you know, how to suss things out. And that's all I'd done on that sentence, and I used when and where I could, and it was fucking hard work. It was really hard work. I don't know if I should be swearing. Maybe they might not be able to sell that tape, but sorry, you know. I just become aware of that. I keep swearing. But it was hard work. It was really hard work, that sentence. Trying to use drugs in that environment was hard work. You know, I'd be on the phone to my family. Can you send in this? Can you send in that? Can you send in this? Can you send 20 quid to blah, blah? Can you send, you know, it was just, oh, it was heavy. You know, and when you get a bit of tick out in the community and you go and score off your dealer and you get a bit of tick, you think, oh, well, I'm not going back there, I'll go somewhere else. You know, and that's how it was. But in there, you can't go somewhere else. You know, you wake up and see the geezer every day. You know, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely getting that visit. I'm definitely getting that visit. I'm definitely getting that visit. What visit? Whoever visited me was only, me old mum and me nan. They was the only ones that visited me. And me mum would go up and get tea, and me old nan, bless her, man. Oh. Sorry, oh. Just thought of me nan, and you know, she'd like, go here quick, and she'd give me 20 quid. And I'd be like, oh, thanks, you know. And she'd be terrified to do something like that in that environment. Prison visit, loads of officers around that look like police. You know, it's just like, oh, makes me cringe how I, you know, where, you know, I didn't really. But anyway, so, you know, I didn't learn much on that sentence. But thankfully, I got another sentence. And I come out, I only lasted 6 weeks in the community. I no longer could cope, you know. The bottom line is my using was so sore. I was in a hotel up Ivy Grove. Within a couple of weeks of coming out, I was on the floor again. You know, I was spending the days walking about, looking on the floor, hoping that some money would fall out of the sky. You know, I'd get me gyro and I'd have a blowout, you know. And that was about it. That was my reality, you know. I ate rarely, you know. I was about 10 stone, you know, skinny. I remember having to go in chip shops asking for bow. You know, can you give me a bag of chips on tick? And then avoiding walking past the chip shop. What the fuck, you know. That's sore, isn't it? You know, but that's how bad it got. You know, that was how bad it got. That was the reality of it. So within those couple of weeks, what I'd done after them 6 weeks period, it was too much. So what I'd done was, it wasn't a conscious thing. Conscious thing that morning was I woke up and said, I'm going to go and earn some money because I need to score and I need to have a proper user. But unconsciously, what I was going to do was going to get myself nicked because I couldn't cope in the community no more. I couldn't cope using drugs no more. And I knew I would be looked after if I handed my will and my life over to the care of that institution. I'd get 3 squares a day, I'd get clothes, and I knew I could. And in a way, I had a little bit of an identity in prison. I could be the cleaner on the freeze, or I could be whoever, you know. Out here, I was no one, you know, and that's sore, isn't it, really? You know, that's the reality of using, my reality of using drugs. But a wonderful thing happened, you know. I was getting allocated to I was talking to a prison officer once I got my sentence, the second sentence, and I was getting allocated to a serving prison. And he was going through my file, and the first time, I don't know where it come from, maybe it was my iPad speaking through me. I actually said, and I don't know where it come from, but I actually said, "Oh, Governor, I've got an horrendous drug problem. I need it sorting out. Please, can you sort it out? You know, can you help me?" And that was when recovery started for me, believe it or not. I had the first time in my life I actually asked for help, and I got some help. And I got sent to a prison where there's a 12-step treatment centre, and there was meetings every day. So I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't know much about Narcotics Anonymous, but a mate of mine cleaned up when I was using, and I thought he'd found God, and he was nuts, and he'd walk about talking about, no, his brother cleaned up first, and me and my mate were still using. And when we see his brother, he would look at us and he'd go, "The disease is rampant, right?" So me and him, right, me and my mate, right, would look at him and go, "Fucking hell, he's lost it," right? And I'll be walking away thinking, "I've not got a disease. What's he on about? There's nothing wrong with me." I said, "He's gone," and he went, "Oh, don't listen to him," and we'd go off and we'd use. Anyway, he got clean. My mate got clean eventually. And I remember bumping into him and he said, "What's happening? What's going on?" Yeah. And he never tried to ram it down my throat, and you know. But anyway, when I was in prison the first time, he sent me some literature. And that was, I suppose, my first introduction to NA, if I'll be honest. And the only reason I read it is because I was down the block at the time. And there was not much to do. So I read this literature and no lights went on at that time. You know, nothing happened for me. But when I got to this jail and there was NA meetings, and I was sort of like, part of the condition of being in the jail was I was going to do this treatment centre, and part of the condition of doing the treatment centre was you had to go to the meetings and you get these chits signed by the secretary. So you had to attend 2 meetings a week. So that was my first introduction to NA, sitting in the meetings thinking, "Oh, you lot are mad." Well, not the geezers that was in the meeting, they're all mad. And it was just like a normal meeting. It was run like a normal meeting. Someone sitting at the front, someone doing a chair, literature, readings. Everything was exactly the same as our meetings were run. And I just thought, and there was a big flag behind the secretary of the steps. So straight away I looked at that and I thought, "God, God, God." And I thought, "Nah, it's not a bit of me. This ain't a bit of me, God, God, God. I'm not into that, you know, it's not a bit of me." And continued using, because that's all I knew what to do was to, you know, it was like I wanted to rubbish that. Well, what I know now though is because I was so scared of actually sitting down and thinking, "Let's have a look at you for 5 minutes. What's going on with you?" I was too scared of doing that. You know, I thought, no way, I'd rather go out there and deal with the geezers who's selling drugs. I'd rather talk bollocks out in the cells. I'd rather do anything but sit there for 5 minutes and someone say to you, "How are you feeling?" Phew, leave off, "How are you feeling?" You know, it's like, "What? How are you fucking feeling? I'm all right." You know. So that was not on the agenda, really. But eventually, I carried on going to the meetings, and eventually, you know, and I was, I have to be honest, my arm was halfway up my back, you know, and I'd already had, you know, a condition of being in this prison was you had to sign a thing to say you'd remain drug free, and if you got 3 positive urine samples, you was going to get kicked out of jail. So I had 2 positive urine samples for opiates. And if they'd have tested me for butter, they probably would have got a positive and all. I smoke more butter than I did heroin, I've got to tell you. But anyway, so it's just how it is in them environments. And you know, but eventually something clicked for me. And there was one guy, it's funny, I was talking to Joe earlier about this guy. I've just heard he's clean again, and please God, you know, he stays clean, he gets clean again. He was in there, and I knew him from another jail, and he was about a year clean at the time. And I just looked at him and thought, "Fuck, you know, has he done that?" Because I judged him to be worse than me when we was using in this other prison. Ugh, he was murder. I could switch off. He wouldn't switch off. He'd be running around the landings. He'd be hunting down, going on other wings. He'd be doing all sorts to get whatever. And he was clean. And I thought, wow. And that was when something, you know, something, you know, cultivated. I was starting to cultivate this voice. If I'm honest, I've been screaming for years, but really, really quiet. Don't have to be like this. You know, when I was running at my mum's with the video. Because I'm not one to say that when I was using, I never had no feelings. I had fucking feelings. That's why I used. I had feelings. When I was stoned, I didn't have feelings. But towards the end of my using, I had more feelings than I had not feelings because I was stoned less and less and less. And I used to feel the shame sometimes when the behaviour of doing stuff like that. I used to, you know, that's why I was walking about with my head on the floor. Constant shame, really. Can't look anyone in the eye, you know. Went off on a tangent now. But anyway, so this cultivated this voice, and this voice started to get louder and louder and louder. Don't have to be like this. Doesn't have to be like this. Doesn't have to be like this. Maybe these people have got something, and maybe there was something going on, and there was something going on. Anyway, I was on my last legs. I was going to get kicked out of this prison. So I, you know, and I was going to the meetings, and there was this guy, and there was another guy, and this other guy, he was a funny, he's a little fella, and he's funny, man. He's doing 10 years now. He relapsed. He's doing another 10 years in prison. Funny guy. And he used to turn up at my cell and go, "Cab's here, we're going to a meeting." You know, and we only got to walk down the stairs to go to the meeting, you know. And he's just a funny character. And that night he turned up at my cell to give it that line. But I'd already met up with someone else and I was in the cell using drugs. And I'd wedged the cell up and I'd blocked up the spiral. So he's opened the spiral, he's seen what's happening, so he's just shot off to the meeting. And that night, I sat in that cell and I thought, oh no, what have you done? You've sat here, you've spent the little bit of money that you did have to last you all week, you know, on this drug, you know, and I was hoping, I said it in the meeting earlier, I was hoping for oblivion, and I got like, woke up, you know, like almost speeding, and I was like, I spent the night cleaning my cell with a green pad, you know, just like, you know, just, it was just, I just thought, what are you doing? You know, and that was, and I sat there that night and I said to him, and I didn't know what I was doing, but I was praying. I couldn't have probably told you that. If you'd have said I was praying, I would have gone, I wasn't praying. I nearly swore. Got to stop swearing so much. Sorry. But, so I would have said, no, I'm not praying. I'm not praying. But I prayed that night and I said, please, don't let me get a piss test. Don't let me get a piss test and I'll stay clean. I'll try and stay clean. And I didn't get a piss test for 3 days because that's how long it stays in. I don't know how long butter stays in your system, but they weren't testing for that. But 3 days, I didn't get a test. So the A-class was out of my system. And I've stayed clean ever since. That was the 16th of August, 1996. And then I got my first day clean. That was the 16th of August. Got my first day clean. And I thought, yeah, I'm, you know, and I went to the meeting that night. The cab turned up and I went to the meeting and I sat in the meeting and I was very scared, very conscious of myself, very self-obsessed, very sort of like, you know, just, that cringy teenage kind of stuff going on again, but early recovery in a, you know, an older body. But I listened and this one guy said something in the meeting that I took away from that meeting. This guy sat in the meeting and he went, blah, 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 blah. And he said, I'm really scared. And that's all he said was, I'm really scared. And it just impacted on me. I just looked over and I'm waiting for a reaction in the room. I'm waiting for someone to go, yeah, mug or something like that. That's what I'm waiting for, is a reaction. And no one said anything. In fact, someone piped up and went, yeah, I can really identify, I'm scared too. And I was like, whoa. And if I'm honest, the thoughts were, you mug. That's what I was having going on. You mug. How can you say that? You mug, right? Because that's my... But then something else that was going on was, wow, I really admire that honesty. I really was like blown away. I thought, how can this guy's got so much courage to say that in a room full of lunatics, for want of a better way of putting it, you know, in a prison environment, all male, very, you know, just how it is. And it was like, and I thought, wow, there's something going on here. And so I kept going back to the meetings, and people said to me, you know, someone said to me after a couple of days or a week or so, do the tea. I went, what? I went, do the tea? I said, I'm not making tea for anyone. Don't you know who I used to be? You know, that was my attitude. I only had a couple of days clean. I've gone from the floor to the sky in a couple of days. I've gone like from this bud who's like, you know, to like, what? You know, it's mad, isn't it? You know, yeah. But I done it. I made the tea. And it gave me the ability to speak to people in the meeting and to say, like, you know, to have a little bit of communication. Not a lot, just a little bit of communication and a little bit of eye contact. Not a lot, but a little bit, you know, and it just started that process off, really, by doing that little bit of service. And also, it made me feel a part of the meeting. You know, it made me feel, oh, yeah, you know, do the tea. Even though I felt a bit of a mug to begin with, I thought, yeah, I had the going on, do you know what I mean, you mug? What are you doing? But I just done it anyway. I thought, you know, let's get real here, all right? This is a guy who's, I'm not making tea for anyone, all right? Who's not got nothing in his life at this moment in time. You know, I wasn't getting no visits. My family had dropped me out, rightly so. Fair play to them. You know, I'd ironed them out for years. They had to go, no more. Sorry, can't do it no more. You know, I had no, you know, all I had in my life then was a pair of prison trainers, a pair of boots that I got nicked in, and some prison clobber. That's all I had. So who was I to, you know, it's mad, isn't it? But anyway, so, I was sharing the other day in a meeting, I'm really grateful that I had that experience. I had 2 years of solid just going to meetings, you know, and within that a bit of treatment, and then working in a treatment centre, and, you know, and they used to let us, you know, if you got to a certain point in your sentence, you'd be let out to go to meetings in the community. So I thought, well, I've got to work over there. And they wouldn't have me to begin with to work as a peer support. They said I was too angry. I thought, what a liberty. I was going to swear again then. I was like, I'm not angry. But I'd be like, I'm not angry. You know, oh, I was raging. Jesus Christ. That was for the first 5 years, I think. Somewhere around that. But, you know, I was in trouble anyway. But eventually, I carried on. I stayed clean. Eventually, I got over there. Eventually, I was asked to work over there, and the reason is the only reason I wanted to work over there really was because I wanted to get out on a Saturday to go to a meeting, you know, and that was the bonus of working over there. So once I worked over there, they let me out to go to meetings out in the community. So, and we had a Thursday night meeting as well, where people would come in, you know, and we'd hear chairs, and 9 times out of 10, if it was a lady coming, the gaff would be full to the rafters. There'd be loads of bods in there that don't even go to meetings, you know. It'd be like a peep show, you know. Felt sorry for them. And I know now probably why they don't do that no more, you know, same sex in prisons, you know. But I'm glad they done it then, because that's how I met my girlfriend. But I'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, so, you know, that was beautiful to see. People were coming in, H&I, and they was bringing in the message that it's possible and it's out in the community and it's big and it happens, because my only experience was in that environment. And it was like, wow, these people are coming in and they're telling us, you know, Tosca come in, done a chair. A few people come in I still, you know, got relationships and friendships with today. And it's, you know, it was incredible, you know, to hear that message. And, you know, guys used to come in on boxing days and things like that. And I used to think, part of me, if I'm, you know, that thinking again, right, would think, oh, sad bod, coming in here on a boxing day. But then another part of me would think, well done, man. Wow, I admire you, you know. Fantastic, thanks very much. You know, brilliant. You're giving up your time to come in here and talk to us, you know. So, you know, I'm like I said, I'm grateful for them first couple of years of just being out. You know, that's all I had to do was go to meetings, and thank God for that. It stood me in good stead. I put a solid foundation in place, you know, and I did start to get to release to meetings, and that was scary, man. Coming out in that environment, being clean at Victoria, 100 mile an hour, I had a panic attack. Well, it felt like it, and my heart jumped out me. I was, you know, and I'd arranged to meet my girlfriend, and I was on the phone, where are you? You know, I was terrified. It was, that was a whole new ball game to actually come out of that environment. And if I'm honest, at the time, it was a relief to get back to prison that night. First couple of times I come out clean, it was a relief. It was like, whoa, fuck for that. You know, which is really mad, but that was where I was at, you know. I've always, you know, I remember, anyway, I come out one Saturday, and I was scared and whatever, and, you know, I've gone to early risers in Chelsea, and I met my girlfriend at the meeting, and this guy come over to her and give her an hug, and I'm looking at the corner of my eye, and I've judged that he's hugged her for far too long, right? Far too long. I slip up to her after he's gone, and I went, who's that? You know, and we was having a joke about it the other day. Everyone in NA was gay at the time. Do you know what I mean? Every man in NA I thought was gay, because every time I said to my girlfriend, who's that? She'd go, he's gay, you know. And I'd be like, I don't care, you know, because I was just gone with the insecurity of it. Oh. Car, I'm glad I'm not there no more. I'm glad it was a painful place to be. Bless her, she put her through it with all that. But within that, if I'm honest, what happened within that, which was a great thing to happen pretty early on, was I thought, maybe this don't work, going to meetings, the same meetings. Maybe we should, you know, I just got from that experience not to, maybe just to keep things separate and go to different meetings. And it's worked for me and her, you know. I went into the changed my meeting, and I went to another meeting in Hampstead, and we used to meet up after, and it worked. It just stopped all that, like, oh, it was, you know, poor guy, geezers as well, you know, like growling at them, you know, and they're thinking, who's he, probably, you know, like, you know, just anyway, that's where I was at, bless me. But you know, a lot of people at the time, you know, everyone's got their motives, or everyone's got their different, no, not everyone's got their motives, but everyone had their motives in that environment. And a lot of people, bless them, didn't have the motive of getting clean, staying clean and being clean. They had the motive of getting out of jail, getting parole, whatever. And within that was some good lessons to be learned for me, you know, because I didn't come out here thinking everyone in NA is wonderful and they're all in recovery and everyone's great, you know. Because I don't want to sound fucking, you know, but that's not always the case. You know, I heard this guy share, it was a Melvin or something, he'd done a closing chair at the London Convention, and he said, just because you put a chair in a chicken coop, does it make the chair a chicken? And I went, fucking hell, that's a blinder. What? Just because you put a person in an NA meeting, does it mean you're in recovery? And I thought, car, yeah, go on, bang on. You know, I remember listening to the tape thinking that's great. But I had that experience because there were some meetings in that environment. Like, I remember this Saturday meeting, one guy started taking a meeting. He was pinned out of his nut, taking the meeting. He was smacked out of his nut, and he's like, in the front, taking the meeting. And because it was in that environment, I couldn't, just because I couldn't, never mind, I didn't have the tools to do it probably anyway, but I couldn't have gone, oi, what are you doing? Because then you're a grass. And then that's life finished in that environment. You know, life's over. Bye-bye. You know. So, I don't know. It was good learning ground anyway for me. It was good learning ground. Wow. Yeah. So, that's gone quick, hasn't it? But needless to say, I come out of that environment and I went to a treatment centre as part of my parole, and I've always gone to meetings. You know, I've always gone to meetings, and I got a sponsor, and a fantastic thing happened. I worked the steps in that treatment centre, and I'd done them to the best of my ability at that time, you know. But I worked the steps. I started to work the steps again with my sponsor a year or so down the line, and it was just a fantastic experience. It was just a different experience, you know. In my step four, I was writing about the same stuff. I was writing about the fact I never had a dad around, the pain around that. The factor, you know, all that stuff, the stuff I'd done, you know, I was writing about the same stuff in that step four that I wrote about in the treatment centre, but it just, I don't know, it sunk down a level, you know, when I wrote it a little bit further down the line, it went, woof, you know, and it was quite painful, but fantastic healing, you know, and wonderful things happen in recovery. At that time, around that period, I was writing my step four about my dad. Now, bless my mum, I love her to death. You know, she still, you know, I always see her over the Arsenal. She still goes, she's season ticket holder like myself. And she's 70 this year. And, you know, I love her to death. But my experience of my dad when I was growing up was, you're just like your old man. Or, you know, oh, you know. And, you know, it was her hurts, her whatever, you know. So anyway, when I was writing this stuff in the step four, I got a phone call from a guy in recovery I'd known for about a year or so at meetings. We'd go meetings together, we'd do stuff together. And I got this phone call and he phoned me up. He said, I've got to ask you this really weird question. I said, go on then. He said, what's your mum's name? Something like that, right? And I went, fucking hell, that is a weird question. Do you know what I mean? What's your mum's second name? Like, what's your mum's name? That's it, mum's name, mum's first name. So he didn't know, he obviously knew the second name, so he knew my name. And I thought, I don't even know your second name. And you ask, anyway, I told him, he said, we've got to meet up, we met up for a coffee. And he went, this is really weird. I went, what? He went, we're cousins. And I went, fucking hell, that is weird. He went, like, you know, body in NA, and it's all son of family. And he went, my mum's your dad's sister. And I went, wow. So then I got the opportunity to go around his house to meet my aunt and to get a totally different perspective on my dad. Totally different from his sister. You know, out come the photos and, oh man, that was fantastic. And I've had lots of experiences like that in recovery, or similar experiences like that in recovery, that just along the ways tell me, oh, yeah, you're meant to be doing this stuff. It's meant to be, you know, it's meant to be happening. There's little things that, you know, even how I met my girlfriend, it's mad. She came in to do a chair in prison, and the only reason I sat at the front that day was, I don't know, because I never sit at the front of a meeting, because it was quite big when there was a woman or perceived a woman going to come in. You know what I mean? They'd be staring at the front and I think they'd be looking at me. And I ended up speaking to her after the meeting. Oh, there's loads of stuff like that that has happened in recovery. You know, when I sat down with my mum and made a formal amends to her. And just, well, I had a chat with her, formal amends, but it was an amends. And I had a chat with her and, you know, And I projected that she was going to say this and say that, and she was going to act like this and be like that when I said this, and she was going to say that, and da, 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 and it went on for weeks. Oh, it was, I had this, so many conversations in my head about how this was going to go. It was, anyway, the opportunity appeared, and it went nothing like I thought it went. Nothing. I sat down and I said, look, you know, I was, you know, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't just about saying sorry, it was about being accountable for my behaviour. And standing up and being candid. And I sat down with her and I done, you know. And then she went, well, you know what, there's a couple of things I want to say to you. I'm really sorry you never grew up with a father. I'm really sorry me and your dad got divorced. And I was like, whoa. And then it just opened up this conversation we had. And it was amazing. Amazing. Really. Unbelievable. And for the process of, you know, doing what we're doing here and what gets suggested to do, you know. And and I've had some amazing experiences in recovery, some wonderful experiences. I've been able to travel, been to Thailand a couple of times, you know, with my girlfriend, in case anyone gets any ideas. You know, because everyone said, oh yeah, Thailand. Yeah.
mirror.
And I've been to India a couple of times, which is my favourite country. You know, as I judge, because of the society I come from, these people have got nothing, yet they seem to have something we've not got. You know, they've got something inside that we, you know, it's just like some of them experiences I've had out there. That's phenomenal. You know, and that's all, you know, I couldn't get out of Oxton towards the end of my using. You know, I couldn't get out of bed. Most days, you know what I mean? Let alone go the other side of the world. And, you know, I've watched my football team win the double twice, clean. Unbeaten for a season. Play some absolute blinding football, you know, not like boring 1-0s. You know, I've watched that as well, but that wasn't clean. And, this is an analogy, right? But this I could use for other areas of my life, so, you know. But it just happens to mean a lot to me. When I was using, I had a season ticket over Arsenal. I bought it from 1988 or 89 for £200. Me and my brother both bought a season ticket. I didn't really care. I didn't really value it. I used to turn up sometimes at half-time, go in the toilet, use drugs, run upstairs if I heard cheering. You know, and that's most areas of my life. I didn't really care, wasn't able to be really present. You know, and I lost the season ticket through my using. But little did I know, my brother kept it on. He never actually give it to this guy. He kept it on in his own name. So I found that out, and I said, "You're joking, now? What is it?" I said, "Well, you better ring him up and tell him that I'm out now, and I'm all right now, and I want my ticket back." He's had a good run, you know. So I got my ticket back, and it was on the day I was 7 years clean. And I was sitting there watching the start of the unbeaten season, And I had my ticket back, and I thought, fuck, you know, don't get any better than this. You know, but that's just an analogy. I could use that in other areas of my life. Like, so much has come back into my life today. So much other stuff has come back into my life. As long as I take care of this and take care of business. And I've been carried and held and loved and understood and misunderstood sometimes, maybe, but, you know, majority of the time I've NA's never let me down, and people in NA have supported me and loved me, my sponsor and my friends, and that, you know, last year's been really difficult. You know, it seems like I've been crying in meetings a lot of the time, but, you know, whether I'm crying in meetings, I'm angry in meetings, no one's ever said, well, not to me face, go on, fuck off, or, you know, don't come back here, you know. And that's phenomenal, because I always look for someone like that, and I looked in the wrong places, you know, and I wouldn't have it no other way. Recovery is fantastic, really. Even though it's been really painful at times, it's been really difficult, you know, there's been the period where I seemed like I was going to meetings just screaming, just, you know, I just was so, didn't know what was going on, just didn't know how to express myself properly, and just would scream out my sharing, and there's been, you know, it's all been learning, you know, from the guy that, you know, shuffled in, you know, 9-odd years ago to the geezer sitting here now. Wow, different guy. But, you know, I'm going to start university hopefully in September. Amazing stuff we can do in recovery. Unbelievable stuff, you know. However, it's like I still need to keep coming back, and it's still work in progress. I ain't to the point where I used to think, well, if I get a year clean, I'm going to be sorted. And I wasn't. So I thought 2 years, sorted. I wasn't. 3 years, sorted. I thought it's got to be 10 years. So I'm still sort of hoping, right, that I'm going to be sorted in a few months' time, day at a time. Who knows? But I judge that I probably ain't, and I need to keep coming back. And I'll leave it there. Thanks.